Blog Talk Radio.
The full moonlit nights, an infant cries in the great void of silence before we knew time. A miracle spawned the dawn of life.
Have you ever stared at a spider web? Have you ever observed a spider weaving this intricate wonder? Nature is amazing. Did you know that gold in its liquid form is highly toxic? Is actually poisonous? One creature, a form of bacteria known for its ability to protect itself from the toxic effects of liquid gold, does this by excreting a compound that solidifies the gold, turning the gold into solid gold nuggets. This is how this bacteria, this organism, defends itself from the toxicity of the liquid gold. And the result is the gold nugget that we see. This is a biomineralization process. Nature has found an answer. This is the wisdom of Gaia. Join us as we discuss natural, sustainable solutions. In this case, as they relate to the world's food supply. Tonight on Main Street Universe.
Do worlds collide, explode, then shine? No more boundary lines. Like the stories we open, we are left with sides to choose. And though the stories converge, we're still
Okay, everyone, and welcome to Main Street Universe at 7 p.m. on Wednesday. Of course, that means it's time for our flagship show, the Wednesday show, Main Street Universe, the one that started it all, myself and Kevin Baird. Hostess Janice will not be joining me tonight, but she will be back next week. I'd like to start off with a few plugs for our little radio podcast network that we have here. It's actually now a network of five shows. We'll start off with Walking on the Sidewalk, A Horizon Oracle's Journey, with your host, Kevin Baird. And that will be at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, his new time, on Monday evenings. Then on Tuesday evenings, we have Mary Phelan and her show, Inner Wisdom. Mary has been a longtime television host for about 13 or 14 years for Telepathic TV. So she had her debut episode last night, very smooth. I thought she did a great job. So tune in to check out Mary. She's very smooth, very calm. She puts a nice energy into her show. And she's a pro. She's been doing it for a pretty long time on television. And, of course, Wednesday, 7 p.m., we have the flagship show, Main Street Universe, with myself, host Daniel Michael, and hostess Janice, who joins me. On Friday evenings, we have Jessie Ann Nichols-George and her show, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. She is an author of two books, Activating Compassion and Activating Compassion, the workbook, the companion book. Then on Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, the times I'm giving you all are Eastern, is Darren Bouquet. Darren Bouquet is a spiritual consultant, and he works at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in New Orleans, amongst other things. So join him for his show, Spiritual Insight, Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. This evening, we're joined by a very special guest who's doing a very interesting thing, a very interesting project that is near and dear to my heart. Last evening, I was on another radio show debating with someone who was saying that genetically modified seeds are perfectly safe and scientific and normal, and I was debating that they are not, and that there are other things and that there are other technologies that we can look into to help feed the planet and to do so safely. It was a friendly debate. I'm friends with the person, but it is a subject that I'm very passionate about. That when you mess with nature on such a DNA or genetic level, it is not the same thing as the natural grain crossbreeding that people have done in times past. There is a huge difference between splicing the blood of an animal to a grain or to a fruit in a completely artificial way than to doing so with natural hybridization, for example. One type of dog with another, to have maybe a breed of dog that does one particular type of thing well, and all of this. But enough of that debate. What I'm going to go ahead and do, instead of talking about it myself, bring on an expert and someone who has, in my opinion, come up with a very unique and interesting invention to help feed people quality food in a way that is organic and is natural and does not in any way require genetically modified seeds. And I'm going to turn his microphone on now. Mr. Colin Cudmore, welcome to Main Street Universe.
Thank you, Daniel, for having me on. It's an honor. And joining me is my partner, Joel Grant, and Thomas Leslie, who will be piping in every once in a while.
Okay.
And thank you.
Yes, and thank you for your interesting invention. And as, again, it's a subject I'm passionate about. I myself am not a master gardener, but I live with one. And she is really good at growing things in small spaces and is also an amazing cook as well. But we'll get right to it.
Yeah. Well, that's ironic.
Colin, is it Colin or Colin?
It's Colin.
Okay.
Colin, Joel, and Tom, yeah. I'm not a master gardener either. And in fact, when I came up with the idea, I might have had at the most a couple of months of gardening experience. I had recently moved from Cape Cod to Bloomington, Indiana, and was, you know, just woken up by the experience I had out here. A lot of food activism, a lot of people attending farmers markets, a lot of people growing food in this area, which is not something I was used to. And I had recently started working with my mom on a community garden, and I just basically didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about gardening, but I recognized the problem that I was previously unaware of, and especially moving from a kind of a smaller town to a smaller city, and realizing that a lot of these people are kind of landlocked by their living situation and don't have access to land to grow food. A lot of people in my town rent because it's a university town, and a lot of their lease conditions wouldn't allow them to grow food. And I was at a farmer's market volunteering one day, and I noticed a couple of vendors selling starter plants. And I was taking a break from my duties that day, and I was drinking a coffee, and I'm just watching all the people milling about the market. These two vendors were selling starter plants, and everyone around them was selling actual ready-to-eat food or plants. And I noticed that nobody was buying starter plants. And I sat there for about 15 minutes, and I was just kind of shocked by it. And being an inventor, curiosity often overcomes me. And I literally walked up, and I approached these two vendors, and I said, you know, why do you think it is that people aren't buying these? What's going on? And I was struck by the fact that they both said the same thing without knowing what the other one had said. They both said people either think they don't have the time or they think they don't have the skills. And I thought, man, there's, you know, there's got to be a solution here, because it's so many people in this country that, you know, probably would love an easier way to grow their own food, and especially an easy way to grow healthy organic food. And I started looking into it. You know, that got my curiosity going. And then I attended a lecture by a gentleman named Will Allen, who runs an outfit called Growing Power out of Milwaukee. That's where he originated. I think he's been in the business for probably over 20 years. He has affiliate operations all over the country, and I believe all over the world at this time. And he's really a pioneer in the field where he's trying to solve the solution of what he calls food deserts, which are areas and locations of the country where people don't have access to healthy fresh food or organic food. What he'll do in his operations is he'll actually create soil on his property. They'll move into a city with truckloads of soil, go into a parking lot or, you know, an empty field, and literally dump 2 feet of soil and then grow an organic garden right there. And he's led the movement in that. And I attended a lecture by him, and he really woke me up to the, you know, the disparity of access for people all over the country. And it was not something I had ever really thought about, where people in urban settings, especially poor urban neighborhoods, lack access not only to fresh food, but organic food in many cases, because the supermarket chains simply, you know, choose not to build there for financial reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, boy, these people, you know, they really need a way to grow their own food. And so I started thinking about it, and didn't know what direction to go in, and didn't really know anything about gardening. And I literally invented it by watching YouTube videos, which people find pretty humorous, but that's literally what happened. I just needed to know, okay, how does one grow food in a really, you know, cost-effective, fast manner? How does people grow organic food as opposed to, you know, conventional gardening? Like, what are the secrets? And I just would write down the videos that seemed helpful and then go back and review them. And I started, as I was doing that, putting a list of requirements together that I thought would be necessary to create a functional product that people would purchase and, you know, use. You know, first of all, I thought, well, people in urban areas or cities, you know, if they're going to have some type of container that I invent, they're not going to have a lot of space to grow food in, so I might as well make it vertical, grow food vertically. So that was one of them. you know, then it's got to be affordable, it's got to be easy. And, you know, so I had this list of criteria that I wanted to work with to design something that, that would be marketable. And really the best feature that I came up with was the idea of actually putting your compost inside your garden. And that was really the best feature by far. And I realized right then, boy, I think I'm really onto something there. So I started looking around and researching different ways that people compost their kitchen scraps. And I saw some videos about vermicomposting, which is using worms to break down your organic food scraps as opposed to heat, which most people are familiar with, those like tumbler, black barrel type of composters. And there's a lot of benefits to vermicompost over traditional compost, and I'll have my partner Joel explain that a little bit to people here for you.
And before we get to that, I want to get to some other basic questions, and I want to comment on what you just mentioned earlier as far as the introduction. I do think it's fascinating, and I definitely have deep respect for you for admitting that you were not some sort of master gardener, but using your own inner spirit and creativity and drive, you still managed to come up with a really amazing invention. So my hat's off to you. That's exactly what we like to talk about here as one of our mission statements in the Main Street Universe Network, is people reaching in, reaching down deep, and in this case on a topic you were not an expert on, but ended up coming up with an amazing invention in that field. So I salute you for that.
Thank you. Yeah, I knew almost nothing about gardening, to be quite honest. I mean, literally, I had a couple of months experience.
But there's
such a need for it. There's such a need for bringing access to organic, fresh food to people all over the world. And there was not a good vehicle for that I saw. And I have a lot of confidence in my design abilities, and I wasn't daunted by the challenge at all. I thought it would be fun, and I knew I could do it. I didn't know that it would work as well as it does. I was quite surprised that the product that people can see by going to our website at gardentowerproject.com, that product is 95% identical to the first prototype I built. It just worked, and I actually knew it would work, but didn't understand quite why it was working as well as it was. And I contacted some master gardeners in my community, and I brought my first partner, Joel, in, who's an environmental scientist, knew a lot about it. And they helped me tweak the design a little bit to make it a little bit more efficient and user-friendly and more adaptable for the worms to do what they do. And so, but I appreciate that.
Yes, and from there, what I want to do is now get to some very specific questions that our listeners, and there's quite a few in the chat room and elsewhere, many different ways that people listen to, you know, the new media that is podcast and internet radio and radio. Mm-hmm. And I would like to start off with just some physical questions and details. How big is the garden tower, and where could you use it?
This is Joel. The assembled size is actually 42 inches tall, so about 3.5 feet. It's essentially a cylinder, and the width is 27 inches. So the space you need to use it is quite small. The footprint of it is only a few square feet, but you do need some space around it for the plants, obviously, to grow out and to get sun. A 5x5 area is about perfect size, and it can easily be found on a patio or a deck or a balcony or out in the yard or even a rooftop.
Very good. And I think I read as part of the information that your 4-foot square, or now you're saying total with everything growing out, 5x5, is equivalent to 25 square feet worth of planting space.
Yeah, so the actual surface that the plants are growing out of is upwards of 25 square feet. Like I said, it can be done in a smaller footprint, but we try not to – we try to encourage people to have at least a 4-foot wide area so they have some workability to work around the garden tower. And also, the more light you can get onto it, the better it's going to perform. And a lot of people say, well, you know, what about the backside? And what we've experienced is that unless you're against a really dark surface, like a black or dark brown building, you're going to have a lot of light reflection off the back, which is actually makes for planting more shade-tolerant or partial sun crops, vegetables, quite easy and quite productive. So, you know, you get 360 degrees of planting capacity. The tower's width makes for a lot of surface compared to most other vertical growing solutions out there. And, you know, although Colin said it's mostly the same as our first prototype, we've made it much more user-friendly and more refined. And, in fact, you know, that's where we're taking it with our Kickstarter right now, on about a third of the way into our Kickstarter.
Okay, and we'll get to that a little later. We'll keep with some of the physical questions here about the invention itself. And you mentioned the shade plants. I know right now there's kind of a trend now for people wanting shade-grown coffee. I've seen that in the designer stores. So now, describe now physically two questions. It's how many plants can you grow in this, what you say will totally be maybe a 5x5 space, and what is the garden tower made of?
Okay. Well, it's the amount of plants is real simple. There's 45 openings around the outside, which are nicely, deeply formed planting pockets. And they're formed in such a way that they actually intercept water going down the side of the tower, and they kind of self-clean themselves in that way. And then on top, you have generally room for about 5 more plants, depending on what you want to grow. Some people will grow a 4 or 5 foot tall tomato on top of the unit, in which case you're not going to put 5 tomato plants in the 1.5 square feet on the top surface. But so it varies, but you could easily have 5 large heads of lettuce or cabbages or something like that. What's the other question?
And we've also, Dan, we've also experimented just at the end of last summer with growing 2 plants in 1 hole on the side, and we were using chard to do a little bit of experimentation, and it worked wonderfully. And the reason I think that we're able to do that and in general get the plants so close together in this product is that the vermicomposter, which we'll get to, you know, in this interview, creates its own fertilizer, and that fertilizer gets recycled back into the system. And the plastic covers the majority of the soil. So you have very little evaporation. So what happens is you have an environment in which the roots have very steady access to very nutrient-dense liquid, which promotes growth, and that therefore you can really space these plants together quite closely because they're not fighting for nutrients like they might in a conventional garden. And so there's the opportunity with certain plants to get far more than 50, and we haven't done a lot of experimentation with it, but in the 2 we tried, it worked perfectly well. So we'll be posting pictures of that this coming summer.
Yeah, generally your leafy green plants can tolerate closer planting together. Depending on how much sunlight they need. So we've had a lot of success with a couple leaf lettuces together, or as Colin mentioned, some chard. Right now, to get to the second part of your question, the garden tower has always been made from food-grade, high-density polyethylene. It's that's the body of it, the planting area. That's about the simplest plastic. It is the simplest plastic there is. It's just polyethylene, which can be produced from different sources. It doesn't have to be petroleum-based, although it almost virtually all is in the U.S. right now. In the future, we'll be able to choose our feedstock for it and actually buy a bioproduced polyethylene. And polyethylene has virtually no additives in it most of the time. It's essentially, if you recycle milk cartons, that's about the identical plastic to what we're using.
Okay, and I really like as well in the first part, dealing with the first half of that question, how you mentioned this working so well because these plants are so close to the nutrients, and again, we'll get to that soon. My next question is more of a statement. The garden tower uses no electricity or chemicals of any kind, correct?
This is Tom. And, yes,
and of course, nothing here is GMO, important to my audience.
Right. Sure.
And now we'll go to there. Now describe the self-conditioning and fortification of the soil. Maybe someone can describe this process for us. This is compost made within the tower itself.
Okay. So the compost column, which runs down the center, the full length of the tower, has an outlet on the bottom and a cap on the top. So kitchen scraps go in, some bulking, some typical carbon matter, some cardboard or round up leaves or brown vegetables, anything that's really going to contribute a lot of carbon and not a lot of nutrients goes in with the kitchen scraps because that creates an ideal vermicompost or worm habitat. So we really recommend red wigglers be used because they're really efficient and fast at what they do, and they break food down very quickly. And then we also suggest that night crawlers be used. Those two types of worms are very widely available, very easy to use. And basically, the night crawlers will go in and they'll move through the compost. They will actually eat compost or they'll eat decaying kitchen scraps, but they'll actually move into the soil column and dwell in the soil, which the red wigglers won't do. So by adding the night crawlers, you're really adding a neat component of the little ecosystem because they'll move around, they'll keep changing the soil, they'll keep forming pockets for air and water movement, and they'll also move nutrients and enzymes around, which makes nutrients more available to plants. So the way this whole process is kind of accelerated as far as getting the nutrients from the kitchen scraps that are breaking down in the compost to the plants is through the drainage of the water in the tower. So when when the tower is watered from the top, the water is going to percolate down, and it's going to entrain a lot of nutrients in the process. And that's why we suggest that everyone captures the drainage as the tower drops below field capacity or the amount of water that the soil will hold and drains out. And then you can use that essentially as fertilizer to recycle the nutrients back into the system. So unlike a typical garden where your nutrients are often leaching deeper and deeper into the ground until the plants can't get them any longer, we're basically keeping ours in suspension and moving them around. And in effect, it's sort of like a hydroponic system in that way, that the nutrients are constantly moving and therefore more bioavailable to plants.
Okay. And I actually thought that was just a brilliant aspect of this. And I know that they were calling this tea, this when the water comes down and goes into the bucket below, it's this dark water that you're calling tea that you can then just pick up and pour back into the entire little mini ecosystem that you have.
That's right.
Yeah, there's some water evaporation, but there's zero water wasted. We recycle 100% of the water that drains out of it. And so you could see that this would be a tremendous advantage for areas of not only North America, but for the rest of the world that are suffering from scarcity issues in relation to water or areas of the world that have poor soil conditions and sandy soil where the water just immediately drains through it. So it's really kind of a panacea for a lot of areas of the world that simply don't have the conditions for growing their own food and then import the majority of their food, which is very expensive and bad for the environment.
And this is Tom. One of the things, the brilliant thing that I loved about the design was the way the pockets are designed so that when the water starts on top, if it overflows, it flows directly into the next pocket. And it's actually similar to a design that plants use to focus water along their drip line.
And that was actually, you guys came across my next question that I had written down, which is fine. And that was, in part, but the second half I think I can ask. Say you have an average garden tower, your invention, your product, about, I know this may be according to how many or what type of plants, but about how much or how often would you water it? Because I noticed you saying in the information that it doesn't have to be watered quite as much.
Yeah.
So what would maybe be the
This is Joel. there's one of the really nice aspects to the scale or the size of the garden tower is not only does it produce a lot of food and offer room for a lot of plants to grow, but that soil capacity means that you have a lot of water retained, and that water is easily accessible. So the soil capacity is about 6 to 7.5 cubic feet of soil, depending on the soil you're using. And in general, we've measured that a good potting soil will retain as much as 14 gallons of water in the space of the tower. So with that sort of water retainment, a lot of people write us and they say, you know, why don't you add a water reservoir? Why don't you make this thing self-watering? Well, the simple answer is it's not necessary, because even in 100-degree temperatures and dry heat, the most you have to water, unless you're at a real extreme, is 3 times a week, unless you are just starting plants out. But once the plants are established, in general for the growing season, twice a week is all the watering that's required, which is really nice compared to smaller growing systems.
Okay. Now, it also mentions on your website that the plants grow significantly faster. And I'm just curious about if somebody can speak to that.
Well, it's a little ambiguous. It's a little subjective. Basically, you're creating a really nice, high-quality soil environment. The nutrients that are in the system are getting moved to the plants. So as opposed to a static container garden where you just had a pot with soil and essentially really nothing living in it on a macro level, not worms not getting into it, no nutrients really coming into it unless you're using a fertilizer, it achieves some very spectacular growth rates. And
I understand that. I do not think that it's – if what you're saying is correct, it sounds like it's a reasonable statement to make, which brings me to another question, and that is I saw mentioned that – there's no real weeding, unlike conventional land gardening here.
Yeah, this is Tom. The garden tower is so simple to take care of and so accessible. That's the other thing that's brilliant about it, is the easy accessibility for anybody. There's once it's set up, seniors and people who have accessibility issues will find it really easy. Weeding it consists of stepping up and just plucking out a few little sprouts. The soil is loose and well aerated, and so they don't really get a hold in the system. It makes it really low maintenance.
And you're starting with a quality potting soil that are typically inoculated from all weeds before they're sold. So you don't, you know, they just simply don't exist in this tower. But it's very rare that you have to do any type of weeding. And when you do, it is a little leaf here, a little leaf there. You know, and also with, like, conventional gardening, there's no tilling of the soil, you know, so there's no back-breaking work. And you can just pull up a chair, literally garden from a chair. So it's really, really a lot easier. That's one of the things that I noticed when I was working with my mother in her community garden when I was testing original prototypes. And my mother would say to me every weekend, okay, Colin, it's time to weed. I'm just like, oh, God. And it really struck me, you know, every time I was weeding, I think I'm really on to something here, because it was just such a pain in the butt. And the garden tower is just a pleasure. I mean, last summer I remember, you know, I had one going for, you know, taking photographs for a website. Just like every morning when I woke up, I'm like, oh, my God, I can't wait to, you know, go see how much it's grown today. Because you can literally almost see it overnight because the how well it performs. It's almost like it's not as fast as a hydroponic system, but it's basically the same concept where the roots have that steady access to that nutrient water. So it's closer to that in terms of performance than it would be to a typical, you know, garden in your backyard. And it's a lot of fun, and there's very little work. It just performs. It's really quite wonderful.
Well, and you'd ask about the significant growth, but also the productivity is really remarkable. We had a couple towers at one of the local community gardens, and I think Joel can corroborate this, but I think it was two plants that over the course of the season harvested around 40, 41 pounds of tomatoes.
Wow.
And that was just two plants in one tower.
That's impressive. And I've seen the size of them, so to see that and try to picture of that, or as far as the pictures, like it standing next to a person, that seems like a very impressive amount for that amount of space for something to produce like that.
Indeed.
And we've discussed the product, the garden tower. Now let's discuss what you're sort of referring to as the garden tower project. And by this, I mean hopes that you might have for it, as far as what are potentials, solutions, because last night I had mentioned I was on another show, I was invited to debate about GMOs. The person I was talking to was all for GMOs and thinks that they can help solve world hunger. And I wonder if you can speak on possible potential hopes for what a system like this could do, maybe to help the world, to help our fellow human beings.
Well, we're very interested in working with other organizations, whether they're private-funded corporations or government organizations or agencies, in order to be able to provide this. We know that our first goal is to become a viable company. Once we're a viable company, we have a plan of building sort of a philanthropic arm that we call Growing Circle. We have a concept about distributed agriculture. And distributed agriculture, we believe, is a key to local economic resilience. And local economic resilience is bringing basically a security to your community and to individuals. The plans that we have include starting in Bloomington and having a grow building, a greenhouse south of Bloomington, and growing food for the community kitchen and local food banks and co-ops. We welcome partnerships with other organizations that are providing food and basic programs to those in need.
You were mentioning earlier the Growing Project, and one of the things I liked, or Growing Power in Milwaukee.
Growing Circles.
Yeah. And, the ones you were talking about, Growing Circles, yes. And the one that Colin mentioned in Milwaukee, it started off as a program, if I read it correctly, to help inner city youth, like, get work. So
yes.
I think it's good to branch out. And as you said, first you need the strength to have the money to be the strong company, then to branch out. Be philanthropic, as you said. So go ahead and plug the Kickstarter program.
Yeah, I'd like to say one thing before we do that.
Sure.
Another part of our mission, and we strongly encourage people to use non-genetically modified seeds in our product. We have educated ourselves, and I think if anyone were to spend a little bit of time doing some research, they would probably agree that you want to avoid genetically modified foods whenever you can. One of the things we'd like to see is garden towers springing up all over the world, where through our website we do video tutorials for each plant that can be grown in our tower, where we show people how to seed save from that plant, so that we can literally have thousands or tens of thousands of individual seed savers all over the globe that can then, if they wish, exchange seeds with their friends and neighbors. But where we create a situation where there's an impossible scenario for genetically modified foods to take over, because we have people seed saving organic food in little micro pockets globally. And that's a huge dream of mine.
And we do work with an organization which actively does that right now called the American Seed Alliance.
Okay. And I think that's actually brilliant. I think it's a great idea, because when people debate me about the genetically modified seed issue, there's two things they usually say. One is they usually say something like, I'm being unscientific and that I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe they even say something to the effect that, oh, I'm just some spoiled Westerner, you know, in the U.S. that gets too much food and I don't understand the world's problems and that I don't understand science. But in truth, genetically modified seeds are not real good science. Forgive the bad English, but they're not great science. They haven't been put to the scientific method of hypothesis, analysis, experimentation, and then theory. They've simply been put out onto the market, mostly behind our backs, except for now there's truth in labeling laws going on. And it gets worse and worse and worse. So to call this a science, the GMOs that is yes, it's a form of a science, but as far as its effect on humans, it has not been put through the scientific method except for just trial by fire. And that trial by fire has been an abysmal fail, and now these seeds are failing. So when you're in India and these farmers are committing suicide,
by the tens of thousands, I know.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's just, it's an awful story.
And
you can't just come up to me and call me a hippie and tell me I'm not being scientific. There's real science behind what we are talking about today, looking at solutions, which gets to the second half of the criticism, is people will say, all I want to do is complain. I'm not complaining. When I have guests like you on tonight on my show or just engaging in the conversation, we're looking at solutions. Yes, we don't all have all of the answers, but this is part of the answer, and we should start looking in this direction, which includes your Kickstart campaign. You guys are doing an amazing job at that, by the way.
You know, people talk about challenging Monsanto, and they're doing it legally, and that's very important. But with the resources that they have and the head start jump that they have on it, I don't see that as being the only thing that's going to work. This is referring to disruptive design and basically changing the system. And we believe that education is paramount to that. The other part of Growing Circles and where we want to go with this has to do with our educational initiatives. There's a lot of lessons about gardening, beginning with patients, that have been lost over the last couple generations as people have been moved off the land and have lost touch with that. I really believe that there's a wave of people looking for something, and they're not sure what it is. They don't know how to put their finger on it, but security is something that we all strive for. And this affords them a way to be able to do that and to, on a scale, actually change the function of how things go.
Yes, and also remember that security, or people feeling well-fed, is part of security. People feeling more well-fed is a more peaceful place as well. So it helps to quench out what these little dictators can do around the world, because they're competing for land, they're competing for water, they're competing for resources. If you can empower the individuals to be able to have little groups, and like you said, and to be educated, then that can have an amazing impact on making the world not only more well-fed, but more peaceful as well.
Yeah, and a lot of these genetically modified food corporations, you know, tout the resilience of their crops to be drought resistance, which is probably one of their main drivers behind why they're doing what they're doing. Well, with our product, it is drought resistant. It recycles all the water that's put into it. So it's like that argument would be mute if everyone was growing with these garden towers. You don't need a drought-resistant seed, because it's almost a perfect ecosystem.
And to me, that is brilliant, and a brilliant aspect of this, that engaging in your case, in your own creativity, even not as a master gardener yourself, you were able to find an answer, and that has been my point on these issues for a long time. What direction are we throwing our minds and our money and our resources at? And in this case, if they do it in the right direction, like you're saying, you can take something like your invention, the garden tower, and put it into places where soil is known to not be good at growing things, and people can watch things grow, and they can be fed.
More and toxic. I think that there's more and more cases of soil toxicity.
Or places of drought. Water stress.
Exactly. So it can go, and regardless of the weather of the area, it would also, the politics of the area might matter if they don't allow people to obtain things.
Right. And you can also extend your growing season. Joel could speak to that a little bit, beyond what you would get with conventional gardening.
Yeah, this is Joel. The garden tower, again, I've talked about the six cubic feet or so of soil, provides not only a lot of moisture, water capacity, but it also provides a lot of heat capacity. And so basically, like a raised bed, it's going to warm up faster earlier in the year, so you can plant it sooner, seeds will be active sooner, root systems will be active sooner. And on top of that, at the end of the season, or the next season, when it's cooling down, you can pretty easily add some extra insulation to the tower or cover it on very cold nights, and the heat will stay inside enough to the point where you keep the plants alive until you have an Indian summer, so to speak.
That's interesting. And what I'm going to do now, gentlemen, is we're going to take a very brief break and then come right back, and we'll continue our conversation. When we come back, we'll mention some of your the Kickstarter program and some other things and raising money and trying to get this out to the world. I think it's a great idea. I like that you're engaged in what my friend Dr. Zohoronomous calls a life economy versus the death economy approach. And that's one of the reasons I wanted you guys on the show, because you're using your head as well as your intuition and your creativity and your heart and trying to do the right thing. And what we're going to do is take a brief musical break. And this is from friends of mine. This song is called Sixth Son. The band is Woven Green. Okay, we are back, and we're talking to a few different folks here that are involved with the Garden Tower Project. You're listening to Main Street Universe, and I want to remind everybody, as we're on our internet presence, we have a marquee page. I call it the marquee page. That's the show page that people see, and they can go down and talk in the chat room. Right above the chat room floating there are some blue links to the Garden Tower Project, as well as to their Kickstarter campaign. So feel free to, if you can open the right windows and still listen to the show, if you're doing it now, to go ahead and do that and see what they're all about. It really is, I was amazed by the simplicity of this thing and the creativity of it. And I just remember thinking, I can't believe this hasn't been already invented.
I thought the same thing when I invented it.
Yeah,
someone must be doing this. It's too obvious.
And as a developer on it, we were all stunned that we couldn't find anything in history that resembled it as far as modern design.
Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer. You'd think it would have been done before, but apparently not.
Well, for those just joining us, let's do a very brief recap, and it will move on from there. Basically, this team of people here, and the inventor being Colin Cudmore, have invented a device called the Garden Tower. And this is a tower that's about, takes up entirely, as I think it was Joel or Tom mentioned, about 5'5" area space after the plants grow, and it's about 3.5-4 feet tall, but is the equivalent of 25 feet of planting space in this little tower, and it's self-composting, and it recycles the water as the water comes down and the ants move and aerate the soil, and all the plants are super close to this, you know, highly nutritious soil that the worms have, you know, eaten and discharged. And it's really a great idea. And even the water comes down into another little container after it filters through the whole process. And you can just take this brown water that's referred to as tea and just dump it back into the entire little ecosystem. I think it's a great idea. And you can grow in that space about 50 plants. And they have a Kickstarter campaign. And I was wondering if they would like to mention and go into that right now.
Yeah, so we're on Kickstarter right now. We have 24 days to go. We ran it for a month and a day, and it's been doing really well. So we're really excited with that. But we have a lot of really cool rewards on there. And the whole point of the Kickstarter is kind of to make possible a transformation for our business this year. We've been shipping garden towers around the country for some time and generally sending them to small distributors and retail operations. And it hasn't really been cost-effective to get them to individuals in areas where we don't have a partnership with a retail organization. So the solution to that was to basically be able to make a very slightly smaller garden tower. Our current garden tower is literally 2.5 inches too large for reasonable shipping. So we've been strongly subsidizing the shipping around the country just to make it more available, get people garden towers. And although it hasn't been a great model for us, that's all about to change because after many, many months of working with the industry, we finally had a commitment to make exactly what we need for us, and this is what this Kickstarter is about. It's about our next refined garden tower, very, very similar to what we offer now, exactly the same in function, about 7 or 8% smaller, but otherwise identical with some other refinements. So we're on Kickstarter now. We're offering the garden tower $50 less than it's ever been offered for shipping across the U.S. And for the first time, we're reaching Hawaii and Alaska, and also for the first time, we'll be reaching Canada. So it's a major step for us. It brings our costs down. All of our cost savings are going to our backers on Kickstarter, and we're really excited about it. We're really happy with the support we've been shown.
And it definitely seems like there are people passionate about what you're doing. Now, if you don't want to say this on the air, I don't know if you do or not. I thought it was amazing the amount you raised, I think, within the first day.
Yeah, in the first day, we had over $10,000 in pledges, which was very, very nice. It was remarkable, and we're very, very happy with that.
Yes, that's very impressive. And I'd also like to say that I have some connections here as I live with two Unitarian ministers, and I'm going to try to maybe encourage a project to where we involved garden towers. They have a huge earth-based aspect. I don't want to go into all the details, but it's something that they might be interested in having a few of and maybe distributing a few. So we might be engaged in that at some point.
But sure, certainly.
That will be in private message, I guess, not on the show. Which also, in talking about this, I want to go back a little bit to significance in what effect you think this could have if it really starts to take off in the form of urban farming as well as in other countries. Do you think it will be difficult? Like some countries that you see, and we've all seen the videos of, you know, starving kids in these other places that are, and as we mentioned before, the dictators take over and they suppress resources and the soil's not really good. I see this as an amazing opportunity for getting into areas to where people can just start growing in small communities across the world, regardless of soil conditions. I guess one of the tricks would be, okay, I guess you got to ship them the good soil, perhaps. I'm wondering what, basically my question is coming down to what challenges might be faced for engaging in a program like that.
The challenges that we face engaging in that program and that type of program would actually be about, they can be easily overcome by working with organizations that already have a history and know the terrain of the country that they're going into and are working on aid projects. There's groups doing aid projects all over the world in various capacities. And so that's why we really value building those bridges and partnerships so that we can do what we do really well. We can get garden towers to where they're needed. At this point, it's within the border of the United States. But somebody else who has the resources and the channels to get them to where they need to be, into the hands of the folks who need them is really critical to success of that mission, that portion of the mission.
And when people in some of these third world nations or anywhere where it's very difficult to grow food, anybody can make their own soil. You don't have to ship soil to these people. They can start recycling their biomass and start creating their soil before they even receive a garden tower. So it's not necessary to ship anything beyond the tower. They could even start collecting worms. And one of the nice features of the garden tower is that over the course of like a 90-day period, that vermicompost tube that runs down the center of the unit creates several gallons of worm castings, which is basically the black gold to organic gardeners. So it actually creates more organic worm castings than it actually needs. And you could take that excess castings and start to rejuvenate the soil around your garden tower. So over time, you could actually help to build the soil beyond the environment in which you're growing with this garden tower.
Wow. And that's exactly why I asked the question, because you educated me right there.
There you go.
But don't correct me on my show. No, I'm just playing. No, that's a great point, though, that they wouldn't have to ship the soil, because that's one of the things I was thinking about. But then you're right.
You
can put scraps in, and then it can be – that's one of the things I like about this idea is the self-rejuvenating, multi-leveled self-rejuvenating aspects of it.
Sure. I mean, if someone starts a compost pile, the worms in their area are going to find their compost pile. And then those worms are going to double their population by breeding every 6 to 9 months, and you can start collecting your own worms. So you could make all the things you need to grow food in the compost, you know, by yourself with your kitchen scraps, you know, and some leaves or some shredded paper or, you know, whatever you need. Make your own.
Right. And, okay, and there's another question that someone had asked me actually earlier that just came to mind. And that was, you had mentioned making a slightly smaller version for shipping and all that. Are you thinking in the future, now this is in the future, right now you're pushing what you got, are you thinking in the future of coming up with different sizes to accommodate different things, like maybe a really large garden tower or maybe a little teeny tiny one just to grow a small little bit of herbs, you know, near the office desk or something like that?
Yeah, so this is Joel. We actually get this question quite a bit. A lot of people are like, hey, I want one that's only got openings on one side, or, you know, I want a small one, or can I add on to it? Can I stack two together? We got that question again with this Kickstarter, was, well, will these ones stack? Well, then you'd have a, you know, a 7-foot tall tower, and it'd be pretty hard to use, but no. In the future, when we have the means to really fulfill on our mission of Garden Tower Project and get the program we call Growing Circles going, we plan that a full production garden tower will actually have a very simplified model, bare minimum cost, and it's something that could be made in a number of facilities, even in Indiana, but of course around the world. So basically the best bang for the buck sort of technology. So we'll have a version for that, and then also our future versions will likely be customizable in terms of size to some extent. But I want to mention that the scale of the garden tower is very important to how well the garden tower works. You can't scale it back very much without affecting its performance in the system. It's kind of an ideal size as far as the ecology of it right now. We do have some plans for some other options.
Okay. And right now we've been on the air for an hour, and I also want to let everyone know that the links are on this page for those listening on the internet, on the Main Street Universe page. The links are right there to the Kickstarter campaign. The link is as well right there for the GardenTowerProject.com. And right now I'd like to take things into a slightly different direction, and that is to discuss urban farming in general. And it had been mentioned, the one in Milwaukee, Colin had mentioned that, and it started off as a project to help inner-city kids. And urban farming is starting to grow, and it's starting to become much more popular. And I'll go into one example, and I'll ask you guys for your opinion on this. And this is in New York. New York, there's a pretty amazing urban farm right in Brooklyn, and it's 15,000 square foot. It's a year-round rooftop farm and is known as Gotham Greens. The food is grown in salt by now is being salt by some high-end chefs. They say they grow really good stuff there. And business for Gotham Greens is doing so well that they plan to open two new very large urban farms this coming year. And New York is a perfect place to begin to see a trend towards local urban farming. New York has acres upon acres of rooftop space. It has eager entrepreneurs, sympathetic public officials, and an expanding local food market of people that demand fresh, non-GMO local produce and vegetables and herbs. So I guess how I'm winding this down in this hour is that this is a growing movement, and I see you guys as being a very interesting new part of this, and that people are providing solutions, not just complaining, as I've been accused of in the past when I mentioned GMOs. This show tonight is about the positivity and one aspect of the solution. So I'm wondering if you all could maybe comment as we exit about the potential future of urban farming and what potential you think it could have on the world.
Well, the Garden Tower really does have the potential to transform urban agriculture. Any green space, any greenhouse can easily multiply The productivity of it by the vertical gardening, the vertical component of it, to three or four times to produce in that parcel what they would normally produce with just
horizontal
flat gardening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that has an incredible transformative power in terms of the distributed agriculture is what I was talking about before. Part of the problem with our whole agricultural system is the carbon loading of transportation, shipping things halfway around the world. It's also really destroying the work, you know, of the people's ability to find work and the whole economic basis of our culture right now. And actually, people being able to be more secure in their own food in various communities. So there's an individual strength to this, but there's also a community sharing aspect to this as well. And those are some of the components with the education that can really be transformative and powerful as people begin to see that it can work like that and that people are out there making it successful.
That's a good point. And I'm glad you guys are looking in that direction, too. I'm glad that, yes, you're starting a business, and we all have to make money in this world, but you're also thinking in the direction of serving your fellow humans in a positive way. And I think that's an honorable thing. And I'd like to wrap up pretty much by saying thank you guys for joining us this evening.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you very much.
And I'm going to come back maybe after a song, but I also want to say that the links are posted on our page. There's a Kickstarter campaign. Visit it. It's right there. It's blue linked. I'm going to come back with a few comments. But, gentlemen, I think we've done what we could in this hour, and I'm really glad you joined us, and I'm really glad to have known you and to know that this project is going on, because this potential of being able to grow food in a small enclosed, not totally enclosed, but you know what I mean, environment, where it doesn't even rely on the old standard of, oh, you can't grow food here. It was like, well, yes, you can if you take this and put it into here and compost it and then add the worms and then this and that and then take the filtered water that travels through the thing and then recycle it back into the system. It's really an amazing, simple, and brilliant idea, and it's exactly what this network, Main Street Universe, is about, is people reaching in to themselves to step out of the boring, you know, corporate cube and to be inventors and to be innovators and to be entrepreneurs and to help their fellow humans. So thank you all very much for joining us this evening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you.
Let's all get our hands in the soil and start taking care of our health.
That's right. All right. And right now I'm going to take a brief break and come back with some closing remarks. And this song is from a friend of mine. His name is Tom Teasley, and it's called Fury Dance. right. Our guests were great, and they were amazing, and I was glad to have them on. And I'm going to do some closing statements here so that people are very, very clear, as I was in a debate last night with people on the air on another show about GMOs versus natural farming. I'm just going to go down some basic list of what's going on and what is or what is not scientific. Monsanto owns 90%. One company owns 90% of these genetically modified seeds. It's a chemical country. Well, country might be a good word for it, but it's actually a company interested in making seeds to survive their pesticide. They have admitted to dumping poisonous chemicals, an old outdated coolant that they had a whole bunch of. They dumped them into poor neighborhoods down south in Alabama. They were brought to a court of law, admitted it freely and fully, and the local government allowed them to do so. They are responsible for Agent Orange, growth hormones. Farmers in India are committing suicides on mass thousands of numbers because these seeds reveal bad results. These genetically modified seeds are pointless. They're not even that effective anymore. They're also creating all of these ridiculous allergies that we have. Again, let's be scientific. Let's apply the scientific method. Observation, hypothesis, experimentation, analyzing data, establishing a theory, repeat until results are validated. I may be a pagan that believes in magic, but I do believe in the scientific method, especially when it involves mass seeding across the world. A group of 900 scientists gathered, sponsored by the United Nations, and said that these seeds made by Monsanto, made by one company, one corporation, are completely worthless in helping to solve world hunger, which is their big marketing thing. And as our guest Colin Cudmore had said, they said, well, we need seeds that are resistant to certain types of drought. We need seeds that are resistant to certain types of pesticide. Well, the pesticide Monsanto sells as well. So they are not part of the solution. So it is time to understand that just because I propose a natural solution, that this does not equate to me or anyone else, including our guests here today, that they are not being scientific. In fact, science makes my point for me effortlessly. This is the wisdom of Gaia. Grass does not struggle to grow in the right conditions. The moon affects the water that lives in our bodies. The spider weaving his web is natural, effortless, beautiful, artistic, and very scientific. The solutions can be found within the wisdom of nature, within the wisdom and the brilliance of Gaia, and not without. Science can work with nature. Science can work with Mother Earth. And we can find innovative solutions, as our guest this evening, who was not even a master gardener, came up with a great solution because he reached inside and believed in his ability to invent and create a solution. As I said in the intro, have you ever stared at a spider web? It's a beautiful and intricate thing. And proof that nature is wise and intricate and can always be full of mystery. How does the spider do that? I don't really know. Some of them are so intricate, though it often looks effortless. That's the way nature works. It just is. It's natural. It just happens as it happens. I want to thank everybody for joining us this evening and to support the Kickstarter program of our guests. who are trying to find a natural and much more scientific solution than Monsanto ever put their eyes upon or wanted to put their money into to help solve world hunger. Thank you for listening this evening to Main Street Universe. Blessed be.
Blessed are we in the awakening dawn. Blessed are we in the morning. Blessed are we in the light of the day as we enjoy the earth turning. Blessed are we as the twilight descends and the magic of dusk is upon us. And blessed are we in the dark of the night as we slip into dreams that are calling. Blessed are we in the awakening dawn. Blessed.